Junior high girl who heard her voice
for the first time.
Is that what a sound
like? Do kids still do that? I mean, do kids still hear their voice for the first time? I mean, obviously they hear it for the first time at some point, but I mean, with technology now, everyone YouTubing themselves.
Everyone's videotaping themselves doing selfies and shit from an early age, you know, there's no surprise.
Because, I mean, that was a thing when we were kids, and like, pretty much all of us went through it, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners know what I'm talking about, where you hear yourself on a tape, and you're like, no way, that's not me.
That's what I sound like.
Fucking, that's not me, bro. And then you start, like, trying to change your voice for a while. Yes. It lasts for maybe 10 minutes, and then you just go right back.
Mine didn't take. Welcome to the Film Vault, everyone. Who gave us that?
Isaac Sandoval.
Oh, Isaac Sandoval. I've interacted with him before. Fantastic job, Isaac. First of all, don't let it get lost that is a fantastic song. Four Non Blondes, What's Up? And Linda Perry, Voice of an Angel.
I don't know what you're talking about. The singer
for Four Non Blondes.
I have no idea what's happening here.
She became a producer. Okay. Produced a lot of Pink's material.
I feel like I'm watching a music doc.
Bite your tongue. Welcome to the Film Vault, everyone.
Go ahead.
Yes, that's Anderson.
Yeah.
I'm Brad Bishop.
Jesus.
We're your hosts for today.
Rough start.
Top five films, top five scenes set in Mexico.
Yeah, some of us might be doing scenes.
Old Mexico.
It's in honor of the Mexican Independence Day, which is coming up here on September 16th, on Monday. And it's when the Mexicans back in the early 1800s gave the business, or the white right there, Fred, as Bill Burr would say, to the Spaniards. Hey, get the fuck out of here.
That's right.
It's our turn. It took 5 or 6 days. It took some time. And now you know how they celebrate?
5 or 6 days is some time.
You know how they celebrate it?
Fireworks.
There's some fireworks involved, confetti, drinking, barbecuing. Very 4th of July.
I was going to say, sounds like Yankee Doodle Dandy Day.
This was Isaac Sandoval's idea, too. He pointed out that Mexico.
This is Isaac's episode.
It will be by the time we're done, because we're also going to be playing some mariachi music from his father.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Isaac's just delivering.
Jesus.
I enjoyed the idea. I like the idea. Next week, we will be doing our big fall preview show, which is always one of my favorites
of the
year.
That's right. It's time.
Very excited to do that. So, let's get to it.
The fuck.
I got a fucking plug real quick. Hey, guys, I don't know what's going on with you guys. It's embarrassing, though. No one's buying tickets. It's fucking ridiculous. Some people buy tickets, and I really appreciate those of you who have bought the tickets. But please, if you are thinking of going, please do go over and buy them by September 24th, because if they're not bought by then, it's not happening. What am I talking about? October 1st, the 7:30 show in cities such as San Francisco, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, New York, and I did it out of order. New York.
Chicago.
Chicago's doing better than every other city. Really? Once again, Chicago just crushing it. But guys, you're making me look like a bit of an asshole in front of my distributor. I'm like, hey, these are cities that should be good to go. I've been getting emails for years from these people. And they say that they want to see it. They want to come out and support. It'll be like a big gathering of listeners, too.
Yeah.
In a foreign to us.
That's right.
You know,
in your town, but not a town for us.
So, you know, I get it, San Francisco. You've seen it before. I was up there. A number of you came out. A ton of you came out for the Chicago screening. So I get it if it doesn't happen there. Same with it's not the case with New York or Atlanta or Washington, D.C., though. You guys are not off the hook.
Indeed.
So
get out there and buy those tickets. Where can they find them? I saw some people having trouble finding the link. So where do they go?
Oh, really? I have it at the top of my Twitter page. It's at the top of the Film Vault's Twitter page. Okay. It's on various places on Facebook. It's groupersthemovie.com is a good place to find it.
Okay.
But you know,
groupersthemovie.com.
And then of course here in Los Angeles, it will be opening in a couple weeks. You know what's kind of cool? What's that? What'd you say?
Well, give the date again. It's October 1st.
October 1st.
Okay.
That's Tuesday.
And so wait, the machinations of this are, you sign up to buy a ticket, and if for some reason they don't reach the threshold, you're not going to get charged. There's no risk.
Your card doesn't get charged unless the screening is actually happening. So if you're all of a sudden you get a charge on your credit card, you're like, hey, look, sweet. It's happening. If your card never gets charged, that means
you're off the hook.
Oh, I get it. Groupers. Hey, what was I gonna say? So I spend a shit ton of time on IMDb, as do you as well, right?
Never heard of that.
I think of a lot of our listeners also are on the IMDb, Internet Movie Database. I spend the majority of my browsing time probably on that site. Really? More than anything else. Wow. I'm always on the old IMDb. I was hearing Tarantino in that interview with Paul Thomas Anderson a few weeks ago. Uh-huh. He's all pissed off because he devoted like the first half of his life to memorizing all of the people
and
that
now,
were responsible.
Now you just click on it.
And yeah, he's like, now anyone could just, you know, on their phone just immediately have what took me years to gather, even the playing field. But the other site that I spent quite a bit of time on, and I think I brought it up here before, I don't know if what site you use for like the preview shows.
Oh God, it's for those specifically, it's a myriad. It's like, I mean, I'll do a Google News search for like, fall previews, and then I'll look at, 10 or 12 of them. And so, because some are like Entertainment Weeklies of the world are pretty top level, what I mean? But then some are like pretty film nerdy and they get down in the nitty gritty.
You need to like have a site where like they cut any movie that's actually being released through a distributor, whether it be. A lot of times it's VOD, but like if it's in the theater, for sure it's going to be on a site. And I lean heavily on movieinsider.com.
Outside of Box Office Mojo, which lists every movie hitting every screen, that's kind of a needle in a haystack in a way, right?
Movie Insider is my jam. Okay. I don't like people that say my jam, and I just said that. What the fuck?
What's wrong with you, man? What happened to you?
I'd like to omit that from the record. Okay. I'd like to strike it. Movie Insider, I use a shit ton for cinematics because we're always looking at movies that are coming out that week or the following week.
Sure.
And I was on there doing a little research. Groupers is on there.
Did it take you a second where you're like, what the fuck?
What in the fuck? I clicked it to make sure that it wasn't another movie. It's like that was the first moment where I'm like, holy shit, I got a movie that's coming out. Like, it felt real for the first time. It was weird. Probably when you saw like your book listed somewhere.
I was just about to say, have you started a Google news alert for Groupers?
No.
You should do that. It's really easy.
I know how to do it. Okay. And
but it's awesome because you're going to start getting emails like Anderson Cowan's Groupers hits theaters, blah, blah, blah. And then you get a review, maybe a bad one.
Yeah. The review should be coming in pretty soon. All right. So let's talk about movies that we have seen that are out. Thanks, guys, for bearing with me. And then the next wave will be when the movie's actually available for you to watch in the comfort of your own home, which should be probably, we're guessing, mid-November. All right?
Oh, for the home viewing.
Yeah. But gotcha. I mean, as much as I hate plugging, I hate driving home thinking, why didn't I mention that to the people? So that's
good.
It's a lesser of two evils.
Well, you should.
Lesser of two evils. But yeah. All right, let's get to it.
Speaking of evil.
Oh, wait.
That's a good transition.
Richard E. Kelly. Richard Kelly. We talked a little bit about him
I think Darko fame.
On Patreon last week, but I don't think we talked about it
I think it was two weeks ago we talked about him because last week he came in with like an update or something.
Yeah, he's doing the Rod Sterling biopic.
Yeah.
How would the timing of that is so weird.
Wait, you came in with this update last week?
Yeah, but I think it was on Patreon. I think it was after we recorded the real show, the normal feed show.
Are you sure about that? I have no idea.
And then rest in peace, Daniel Johnston, my favorite documentary probably all time.
I'm glad you said that, yeah.
And
give the documentary name.
The Devil and Daniel Johnston's my favorite documentary ever made.
Last time I saw this was streaming.
And he passed away today, the age of 59, which is crazy because he looked around 64.
I'm surprised he lasted that long.
15 years ago in that documentary.
He wasn't well.
And then finally, Patreon, our most recent bonus episode. I have heard you. I've heard the people.
The Devil and Daniel Johnston streaming on IMDb TV.
IMDb
TV.
The Patreon most recent bonus episode, Brian, that we just released last week, top five blockbusters of the last 20 years. I've heard the people.
Ironically, the man who accuses me of going clever.
I wasn't trying to be clever. I was just going by the rules that I came across on the internets that told me, like, if it does this and it was made for that and it does this, the box office considered blockbuster. Wasn't trying to be clever. I was just trying to be honest. Like, these are my favorite movies that are considered blockbusters.
It felt to me, and I... I'm not criticizing. It just felt to me like you yourself, Anderson Cameron, would rather talk about certain kinds of movies rather than blockbusters.
Yeah, it was a tough episode
for me. I don't think you want to talk about the blockbusters of the world.
Well,
so you
I don't know
were,
if I do.
So I think you were, this is like in the Flat Earth thing, that confirmation bias, like you're looking for something to justify your desire.
Well, also,
desire
I
to
don't look. Like a lot of those blockbusters. I mean, if you recall.
I'm not saying it's good or bad.
I'm not giving anything away. The top two. Were bona fide blockbusters.
What were they?
I'm not going to give anything away because, you know, people who haven't heard the episode or maybe they're going to, you know, become Patreon members and they like to hear it fresh. I'm going to make good. I'm going to make good on next month's Patreon episode. I'll have three
because
there's three movies in my top five that have been, and I was defending myself over on the Patreon message boards a little bit, but you know what? I just stopped. I just gave up. All right, fine, fuckers. Upgrade's not a fucking blockbuster. I want it to be. I like to think it is.
Mr. Rogers.
Hey, quiet. Sorry. Shh, Brian.
I meant the Tom Hanks.
Looking forward,
yeah,
yes.
Tom Hanks. You thought it was going to be huge, and I said I don't think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be successful.
Okay, so let's flick fast here. What have you seen? So I'll make good on that. My apologies, guys. I know when I'm wrong. I can admit when I'm wrong. Unlike the leader of our free world, I can admit it. I think I make it.
Vladimir Putin.
Not bad. Not bad, Brett.
I saw a film.
What? How's your stand-up going?
Pretty good. You really want to know? I'm at a bit of a crossroads right now because in our class, right? Like we're at the part now where it's like, all right, now we're going to start gathering the jokes the best jokes we've written over the last few weeks.
Bored.
And we're going to start polishing those and making a 5-10 minute, whatever set out of them.
Huge regret.
Why?
Of asking.
Oh, because you don't want to know. Okay. Well,
no, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
But I called my instructor and said, you know, I feel as though I'm cheating. I'm not doing what I should be doing because at this point I haven't written any material about having cancer, about the real nitty gritty, the stuff that's going to hurt a little bit, but also hopefully be darkly funny.
Right.
And like I've kind of cheated myself because all my jokes have been about getting old or having a daughter or fucking whatever.
Yeah, but it's good. I mean, I don't want to cut you short, but I really don't like the comic that gets up there, and a lot of them are like this, where the fat guy gets up on stage and does 20 minutes of fat jokes. You know what I mean?
I 100% agree with you, with only two caveats. One
being,
the two caveats. Three, I guess. One being,
please,
yes, it would be a small. It would be just a few of hopefully many jokes. Number two, I am hosting a cancer fundraiser, so it would be apropos to the subject matter. And number three, I think the purpose of this class is to really dig deep and make humor out of pain. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of those painful parts of my life is when I was diagnosed, suffering through my radiation and chemo and stuff. So I. There's stuff there, and so I'm going to work on some material this week about having cancer and diagnosing everything. So, but long story short, it's going well, and I'm encouraged.
It's a gold mine, dude. I was around you quite a bit when you were really bad, and it was fucking hilarious. I mean, you looked like an old man. You're shuffling about.
Well, that part's not funny.
You're like shriveled.
That part's not
funny. That's not the kind of humor
I was like
for.
Hans Bollmann. Can we go to the movie? That's a
Simpsons reference for Hans those of you who might be lost. All right, great. Well, congrats on getting that. I look forward to seeing you on the stage.
Laughs with Bob Ryan, November 2nd.
Yes. Yes.
It's almost, it's more than halfway sold out.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. I was shocked. I asked Deb, the woman who's organizing it, for an update a week and a half ago. And she's like, oh, we've sold more than half our tickets. I'm like, shit, this thing's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You going to be there?
Of course it's going to happen. It's not like a threshold thing. It's going to happen regardless.
You going to be there?
I have not got a ticket yet.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
There's one with your name on it.
Oh, there is.
But there's someone else with your name who wants it.
Is that like a bullet too? Like that's bad. Is it a bad thing?
With your name. It's got your name
got
on it.
Got a bullet with your name on it. All right, let's talk movies.
Let's talk movies.
I had something else I wanted to say, but I can't remember now.
When you think of it, just shout it out. I saw a film. It Chapter 2. It. Chapter 2.
As did I, Brian. Let's
it is in
do
theaters
this.
Now. It is the number one movie in America. It is directed by Anthony Muschietti. He directed It.
Who? He also did Mama.
Mama.
I enjoyed Mama. I saw Mama in the theater.
I enjoyed It.
And it had some questionable CGI, but I liked Mama.
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I loved it.
We're going to talk about the original now.
Yep.
Jessica Chastain stars in this as Nicholas Holt, Bill Hader, Isaiah Mustafa, Jay Ryan, James Ransone, and Bill Skarsgård returns as Pennywise, the dancing clown.
Mm-hmm. We saw a lot of them.
Did you know that Will Poulter was originally cast as Pennywise?
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could absolutely see that.
This was in the Cary Fukunaga, and I know version didn't ever happen, obviously.
Yeah. No. Unfortunate.
So It Chapter 1, the original, came out, I guess, a couple years ago and was a huge hit, and it spawned It Chapter 2, and now all of the...
It didn't spawn. I think that was the plan all along. In fact, no, I know that was the plan, and they shot the actual kids I think they shot a lot of Chapter 2.
But would they have made this if number one was a bomb?
I mean, if it was a super bomb, no, but okay. I mean...
Okay, well, that's kind of what I meant.
I believe, I could be wrong, don't quote me on this, I'm not a giant It fan, but I believe reading something back in the when the first one came out, that they had actually already shot a bunch of the kids. Because the kids didn't change, right? They didn't look different.
No, they must have shot their scenes, you know what I mean, right after, or at the same time as they shot.
But then again, I saw Wolfhard, or whatever his name is. Wolfharden, what's his name? The kid with the glasses, Bill Hader becomes.
Oh, Bill Hader? Yeah, I forgot.
Wolfharden, he's from Stranger Things over there. Saw him on TMZ, and they were talking about how they had to do some stuff to his face, because he got so much older.
Oh, maybe they
It was reshoots.
Maybe they reshoots.
Maybe reshoots.
That'll explain a lot. So the
we're just a movie show. We don't have the facts. That's right. Apologize.
We just pontificate, wax, if you will. So the thing for me, Anderson, that made the first movie special, aside from being a well-made movie, the kids made the first one special.
Right.
They were fantastic. I enjoyed watching them. This one, without them, it's kind of just a conventional.
Well, there's a lot
movie.
Of the kids in this, and it's a marked difference.
Enough.
Every time it goes back to the kids,
yeah.
It's like, that good, warm, fuzzy feeling.
That fun movie that
I
enjoyed.
And I think we were forgiving a lot of maybe some of the shortcomings with the first one, because it felt like a throwback movie, and it was like almost... charming that it felt like an 80s movie and some of its schmaltz, know what I mean?
I've been really racking my brain, and I'm gonna have to go back and watch It, the first one that came out a couple years ago, because maybe it is just the difference of kids versus adults, but I did not like this movie very
much. No, I disliked it thoroughly.
I disliked
it a lot.
I think we both enjoyed the first one.
Yeah, we both really liked the first one. Yeah. It was on your top film set in the 80s, which I felt a little too soon, but what can you do? I got one tonight came out last year that's on my top five, so I should shut up.
That's a good point. The first one felt like the first one was a slow burn. All the scares were set up really well. This one felt more frenetic.
This one felt like a billionaire wanted to pitch a city councilman on having a haunted house, a haunted Halloween themed haunt ride in his city. And he's like, here are the ideas that I got. And he made a movie. It feels like it's a haunted house at times. It's just one set piece after another, one scare scene after another.
As soon as the pattern emerges, which is essentially act two of the movie, where all the characters go back
to get their token.
First of all, footnote to all of this, much like the aforementioned Donnie Darko, the director's cut was worse than the actual movie. Like, too much explanation, way too much plot. I didn't need the ritual. The first one was great because there was so much like mystery. Like, why is this happening? No one knows.
Right. I realized while watching this movie, I'm sorry, I'm looking at a bag that looked like it was covered in blood. My apologies.
Oh, no. Is there a balloon floating over my head?
What is that red stuff all over that bag?
Those are little dots.
Okay, I don't like
those
the dots.
Those are little dots.
I feel like Pennywise might be in there. I remember being scared. I actually had to I was moving out of my house when the last one came out, and I had to go back to my old house. Like, it was like one of the, the last sweep throughs that you do when you're moving out of a house and make sure everything's in order. And it was like the movie, the original, got out like 1 a.m. So I had to go back to this my old house, which is always kind of weird and creepy. Oh, yeah. Ghosts of you and like your loved ones are still in
there. I've
seen
a ghost story.
And so I'm kind of wandering around this empty house, and I never looked in the attic. I have to go up in the attic because I've always wanted to look in the attic of this house. I lived there for like 6 years and never looked in the attic. So I was like up looking in the attic, and I was like, I am really kind of scared right now, which I shouldn't be. I'm a grown man, but this is creepy as shit. I could have easily gone back to the attic after this one. I was thinking while
this
watching,
especially scary.
Now, I don't know how much you know about Stephen King and the original book.
Not much.
Apparently, he went through a coke phase,
and
he did a lot of coke while writing It. And I think that the main problem with this movie is it was based on the second half of the book, which goes off on a lot of fucking tangents and does a whole lot of crazy shit. And if you're looking at for the analogy or the subtext of what Stephen King was getting at, is we all have really dark, deep secrets, and a lot of time we just throw them to the back of our mind and we don't think about them, and we all have skeletons in the closet. And he just kind of made this goofy long fucking book that he wrote while snorting lots of cocaine about how those could manifest in scary ways in your brain. You know, it's almost like child abuse and, you know, things that you did that you're ashamed of. You know, those things that you think of when you're, that you did when you're a kid, when you're in the shower and you fucking cringe. You know what I mean? That's what it
is. No, not me, but I understand what you're saying.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I'm not familiar with the book, but I'm familiar with the fact that it's very long. And all the stuff that I didn't like about this, I kept thinking, maybe that's just the way it is in the book.
I think it's the book. I do. Oh. I really think that a lot of it, and you know, he obviously signed off on it. He's in it at least once, if not twice. Was
actually,
that him?
I liked it. Yeah, he was the shop owner.
Yeah, but who was the pharmacist? That wasn't him with a lot of makeup?
No. Who's that guy? That was the guy from before.
I don't remember.
The creepy guy from before.
I had a hard time recalling a lot of what I realized that if I'd seen the first one again, because I still get the first one mixed up with Stranger Things because they're so similar.
Shouldn't, right, that's so why I don't watch TV?
They're all it's meshed.
That's why I shouldn't watch
intertwined.
TV.
Intertwined. Anyways, a horribly, not well,
it's hard to believe it's the same director.
It wasn't well directed.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, it just felt stiff and like made for TV and like just that's really the tone they're going with.
And all the scares were very obvious. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and the jokes were obvious. Everything was obvious. Everything is just, and really then when it got to the final sequence, it's like, I couldn't give a fuck.
I know, that was so drawn out.
So much too. It's just like, we're going to throw everything at the screen.
And too many details, too much plot.
What it was? It was like, Transformers, but with like bloody bloody clowns. It felt like Transformers.
There were recurring references to the writer character, the Nicholas Holt character, who is clearly a proxy for Stephen King. He's like a horror writer, and he like writes in Hollywood now. Like the joke is he's not able to write a good or satisfying ending. Maybe an allusion to the fact that Stephen King knew Chapter 2 was weaker than Chapter 1. I don't know.
James McAvoy.
Was it Nicholas Holt? Yeah. Oh, that was him. Yeah, the other guy from X-Men. Yes, thank you, James McAvoy. That was embarrassing.
Mm.
James McAvoy.
Yeah, it was. Oh, you know what I learned in this movie, though? I had no idea. This is how movies are made. You might have learned the same thing. Movies are made, you get on the set, everyone's there, and then they sit around and they wait for the writer to write
bring,
the end of the movie.
To bring the script.
They sit there and they wait for him in his trailer to finish.
I'll be honest, Anderson, I know you're a filmmaker now. It felt inefficient to me.
That seems like a very inefficient way to make a movie. And the cameo, the director cameo.
Where was he?
When he came down and he was explaining that he needed it. Nah, never mind.
Was that the director? The guy on the crane.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. He was. I'm like, he didn't direct the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And can I also say, so this is an unfair criticism. I'm just going to say it. Of all the criticisms we have, this one is the least valid. The girl, young Bev, looks so much more like a young Amy Adams than a young Jessica Chastain. I kept thinking, that should be Amy Adams. She looks so much more like Amy Adams.
You know what? I think as soon as I saw his face, I was just out. Peter Bogdanovich.
I thought you meant Bill Skarsgård.
No, I don't mind Skarsgård.
He's my favorite part of the movie.
By far far and away. Yeah, hey, he's his best. Yeah. It's like sad, like at the end. It's like, no, the wrong ending's happening here. Hey. Why Bogdanovich? I hate him so much.
He should not be in a movie associated with children.
No, he's not. I don't think he has any issues.
I think he's dated some young girls.
I think you're thinking of, you know, his pals, but I don't know if he's been accused.
All right, he's not wrapped up.
Why him? Why him? He's like, dude, he wears an ascot. He still wears an ascot. He wasn't in this. I'm sure he wanted to. I do love that last picture show, though. You haven't seen Last Picture Show?
I haven't seen Last Picture Show. And honestly, I didn't like It Chapter 2. I was disappointed. I was looking forward to it.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. It's my second least favorite movie of the year.
What did you like?
And before everyone starts saying, hey, Anderson, you just don't understand horror. That's why us and It Chapter 2 are your two least favorite movies of the year by far and away.
Those are not good movies.
They're my two least favorite movies of the year by far and away.
Those are not good films.
It's not a matter of not getting horror. I like a good horror film.
We loved it.
Yeah. This is just not a well-made movie.
No,
I don't know if it was too many cooks in the kitchen. I don't know if they didn't let him do what he needed to do on set.
Maybe it was rushed.
But like the dinner eating scene was just so... It just didn't feel, it just felt choppy and the tone was off and like, they're all like poor actors, but they're not poor actors. I know they're not, but all their lines were being read stiffly. It was just weird. It was fucking weird.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I'm out. I'm done.
The only thing I think I liked about it was some of the interaction between the friends, but that was very few and far between.
Yeah.
Very few.
A little. I liked a little of that.
Sparse.
I needed more of the guy in the loony bin. I needed more of him. Oh, and like, you know, it's just
his zombie friend.
Yeah, with his zombie friend. I mean, obviously that was a bigger part in the book. You can imagine that was paying homage to the book. I think that maybe you have to really appreciate the book. Who knows? You know what I appreciate is the fact that it was so fucking long. They could have easily made this into a trilogy and they didn't do that to us. So that, I like that.
Yeah, thanks for reeling it in.
Thanks for getting us to get through it and move on with our lives and not have to deal with a third.
The B&B they were staying in was very empty.
What in the fuck was that? Very empty. How do you sign off on that? Like, yeah, we're just going to have this creepy, old, weird Victorian.
And all sorts of stuff's going to be going on. No one's going to bat an eye.
And there was not one person that lives there?
Well, I assume there's...
Works there?
An innkeeper.
Did you ever see that person?
A maid, an engineer,
I don't think
cook.
You ever saw a person that worked there.
No, I never saw another soul in there besides them.
It was so convenient and distracting.
That's what I said. It was
the whole movie
empty.
Is distracting.
Yeah.
Distracting. You know what? I did like the one Bill Hader scene where he goes back and he gets his literal token. I liked that. I thought that was funny. And I liked seeing his backstory, even if it was a little bit over the top. I liked that.
I also liked, and this is probably from the novel, but the reveal of who the chubby kid turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty great.
It was okay.
As a former chubby kid, that was pretty great.
Yeah, it was all right. Okay. Let's move on with our lives. It behind us. Yeah, it's the second worst movie I've seen all year. I don't know if that was deservative of a sniff,
I don't know about that.
Did not enjoy.
What else did you say?
I was assigned a film, Brian.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it.
Someone made me watch a movie. The movie is called Jack of All Trades.
Jack of All Trades.
Yes. You gotta imagine how upset I was, Brian, coming off of It Chapter 2 and then being thrown to this fucking thing.
Come on. What's wrong?
Did you enjoy this movie?
I did. It's rough around the edges.
It's more than rough.
It's not polished.
It's an hour and 25 minutes. And
it's a documentary.
You can skip forward to the last 15 minutes of the movie.
Stop it.
Because I think that's the only authentic thing in this entire movie. The entire movie is a setup, Brian. The entire movie. So here's the story. Why don't you do the storyline? Because you haven't done the... You watched it before I did. You liked this movie, so give the setup.
Jack of All Trades, a documentary co-directed by Harvey Glazer and Stuart Stone. Stuart Stone is the subject and star of the film. He grew up in Toronto, Canada. He was a child actor. I don't think I was aware of Stuart Stone, but he has a lot of credits to his name, at least as a child.
I'm sure we've all seen him.
Yeah, commercials and all sorts of stuff. And he was an avid baseball card collector. His dad, named Jack, was the owner and proprietor of Sluggers,
The kid's got 92 credits on IMDb. Yeah. Actor, acting credits. 92.
Yeah, he acted a lot.
We've all seen him.
Sluggers in Toronto. It was the first. I think it was the first baseball card shop in Canada.
I believe that was mentioned.
Yeah, it was pretty much a landmark, and it became a huge success for a short period of time. Things eventually soured both in the industry of baseball cards and the. Store Sluggers itself, family drama incurs, and then we have ourselves a documentary.
Now, is there any question as to whether or not he's going to meet his dad in this documentary? Is that a?
It's addressed pretty early.
But I mean, is it giving it away if we say whether he does or not?
No, I don't think so. I think it makes it more interesting.
Here's what my belief is.
It makes it more interesting because like any good documentary, this one is about one thing, baseball card collecting, which I found a niche interesting. I don't think everyone's going to find this interesting as I am, but I collected a lot of baseball cards, but it's really about the family dynamic of this family that's now broken up.
It takes a while to get there. And what you learn is that Holocaust only children are fucking weird. That if you come out of that background and you're a Holocaust kid and you didn't have siblings.
Is that what you took from this?
That's the takeaway.
Okay.
What I gather from this movie, from the very beginning, Brian, he has a camera crew there, which is his buddy with his curly hair. All nice. I mean, I like him. He chews the scenery on the camera. He's a character.
Stuart Stone.
Stuart, yeah.
He's a Canadian, so he's very polite.
But like, it opens up with them with the camera crew, and he's like, "Hey, yeah, I'm just gonna have you guys come on over. My mom says that she has some boxes of mine. We're gonna go through them."
Right.
Bullshit. You don't bring a camera crew over for something that banal. No, that's what happened was, I think he did bring a camera crew.
Oh, so you think the whole?
I think what happened was
he
brought a camera crew to the hotel for the end of the movie,
right,
and that happened. And he said, "We got something here, guys, because that was real. Let's have." let's write something. So it's all, it all felt totally fake. Everything from him, like meeting with the cameraman in the restaurant and learning that his dad might may or may not be in town. It just all felt staged as fuck.
I didn't get that impression, but at the same time, I was kind of wrapped up in the baseball card aspect. And then this whole other subplot unfolds, which, like Anderson said, was certainly more, I don't know about authentic, but was certainly, well, yeah, authentic. It was clearly, to me, it was, hey, this guy's a baseball card enthusiast or collector or whatever, and he wants to make this sort of, you know, polished documentary about it, but then this other subplot comes bubbling up from this.
You never got the polished anything, though. He did a couple of interviews. He did one with Jose Canseco, which was fine. It was nice seeing Canseco. That was fun seeing him today. Good sport too. Seemed like he was all right.
That's right. My favorite player growing up.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Of course he was. Of course he was, Brian. Of course
he was. He's a living transformer.
He kind of is.
Kind of is.
But, you know, it got a little bit into the Ken Griffey Jr. card.
Upper Deck number one.
Upper Deck and how Upper Deck kind of came in and flooded the market and ruined everything. But it never really got to a point where I was engaged and cared. And it was never, any one point did it seem polished. Like, that'd be interesting if it was like a really different Talking Heads polished with music, and then he keeps getting drawn, pulled away, and he's like, oh shit, but this stuff's happening over here that I got to deal with, and it's completely like run and gun.
Interesting.
And it wasn't that. It was all run and gun. It was all very just like, hey, I think we got like 15 minutes of really solid footage once we cut it together of, you know, real moments. Let's try and build something to lead up to this. And from the get-go, the very open is, hey, camera crew, let's go look at these boxes that my mom found. It's like, why in the world would you think that that's worthy of having a camera crew?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, had it just been about baseball cards and that dad thing never happened, this wouldn't be a documentary we'd probably ever hear of or talk about.
So it also made me very angry because I have literally probably 30 pounds of baseball cards in my garage, and that was my retirement plan, Brian. And after watching this documentary, I realized it's a terrible, terrible plan.
Right. He goes to the baseball card show and tries to sell his cards, and they're worth like $10.
Not much security at all in my plan, right?
Jillian's gonna be devastated.
Jillian, I have not told her yet. Mm. That's Atticus's future.
You're welcome.
All right, you see anything else? Brian?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did, but I kind of want to save it. It's really good, and I want to assign it to you at some point.
What? Oh, so this isn't going the way that I was hoping it would go. I was really hoping that you would take my enthusiasm for the Amazing Jonathan documentary.
Well, the good news, I think you won the gambling this week.
But why wouldn't you watch it like immediately after how enthused I was, Brian?
I don't have time.
You don't have time.
You
have time to watch this other thing that you think is good. You had time to watch fucking Jack of All Fucks.
Well, I watched Jack of All Trades on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago.
Oh, that explains a lot. Yeah. Excuse me, Miss Flight Attendant, may I have another glass of wine? I would like to swirl it. Oh, I gotta get
it's hard to swirl the wine on the plane.
Get back to this movie now.
They're in the plastic cups.
I'm getting shit over on the Patreon, too, for my dislike of Inception. And that's
weird. Why did you like Inception?
Mm. All right, so are we out of here, then?
Coming up next.
Let me get to the music there, Brian, before you jump the gun. All right, everybody, here's the deal. A little bit of homework. Everyone watch Always Amazing. You can be drunk. You can half pay attention. Just have an idea of that movie in your head. Plus, the subject of Amazing Jonathan is pretty fascinating. And then sit down and enjoy the Amazing Jonathan documentary, unlike any documentary you've ever seen, and it's fucking fantastic.
I'm still shocked that the one we talked about on the Sundance preview was not the one we thought it was.
Well, I didn't really think one way or the other. I'm just like, all right, Brian knows because he's assigning me. He's seen it and he loves it. He didn't look at the release date.
Confused.
He didn't look at awards. He didn't look at
Look at the distribution company.
He didn't look at the fucking quality of the movie and go, wait a minute, this doesn't feel quality, like the ilk of what they're looking for over at Sundance. And that never occurred to you.
No.
Occurred to me 10 minutes in. I'm like, Sundance is just taking anything.
Except for groupers.
Except for groupers.
Coming up next, a scene set in Mexico. Anderson,
yes.
You know what someone bought over on our Amazon click-through banner on AndersonandBrian.com?
A flute.
What a I appreciate the guess.
Yes.
I just learned something
else. A harmonica.
Someone bought it, a novel.
Oh.
Good luck.
That's $35 of shipping because it's so fucking heavy.
I was going to say, the ground shipping. We can't fly planes safely with it.
That and Infinite Jest are the two largest books ever created by mankind.
Is that true?
No. Oh. Well, Infinite Jest is like 3.5 pounds, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
It's got to be pretty big too, because the hardcover.
Yep.
Other things purchased on the Amazon banner. on AndersonandBrian.com include: someone got a Canon EOS mirrorless camera video creator kit, HP HT touchscreen notebook, Med massager 11 speed foot massager. Someone got 20 clear cone reflector trim for 5-inch recessed housings. You know what that is, Anderson? Those are the cans that go for like recessed lighting, like the actual like fitting, right?
That, oh yeah, yeah.
Goes around.
Mm-hmm. And it makes it it makes it shiny and it makes it flush. It makes it flush, but it's also like it reflects the light.
Oh yeah.
So it makes it brighter.
Oh yeah, these ones are reflecting trim. So imagine it's probably office setting or something, perhaps doctor's office.
Could be a house.
If you want really, really bright lights, yeah.
Yeah, you dimmer.
I don't think most houses have the reflector ones. I think that's like an office thing.
All right,
NRS Outfitter dry bag, red, 140 liters. This is one of those giant bags you can like go camping with or like cross a river with, or like they're almost the size of a person. You could fit a person.
Like a hockey bag?
It's bigger. I looked it up. It's 140 liters. Heatwave, instant reusable heat packs and hand warmers. Sunon collection, 5-shelf wood bookcase. Intel Xeon 6-core processor, Sport Dog brand family remote dog training collars, LLT LED compact outdoor floodlight, Stony Edge espresso nightstand. Someone got 18 Dial antibacterial liquid hand soap dispensers, possibly for an office expense. Hey, by the way, a genuine thank you to everyone who, if they have to buy, if they're working the, you know, administrative or they have a small business, they have to buy something for the office and they click through to buy 18 Amazon Basics quad ruled paper pads, for example. Thank you. Appreciate it. Genuinely. Fujifilm Instax mini instant film, a Alex Tech 25 half inch cord protector, Jaybird X4 wireless blue headphones, Brady high adhesion vinyl label tape, LX Tech compatible toner cartridge replacement for Samsung. Sorry, I'll take that Kodak. It's good. Box USA corrugated mailers, air vent, gable, ventilator, attic, and whole house fans, two packs of Craftsman 19.2 volt lithium ion battery, a 4-piece set of full size sheets, wrinkle free, and a water flosser with three attachment tips for travel.
What needs tips?
Three attachment tips for a water flosser.
A water flosser.
A water flosser with three attachment
tips. It was like a water pick.
Yeah, I guess so. I imagine one of the things that shoots water into your gums.
Can I speak?
Please.
Hear the movies, there click throughs. This is the last time I saw you. Somebody took a dive and they decided they're gonna take a look at Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Great movie.
Brian likes it.
I really do.
To Kill a Mockingbird was clicked through as well as White Heat. Fucked. Yes. Gotta love that White Heat. Cagney, Brian. I saw that last month.
Benjamin Button is a borderline 5-star movie for me.
It's borderline 3-star movie for me. I can't figure out if it's a little better than average. Or the Tree of Life was clicked through. Yes. It'll overpower you. Inertia. Heaven Can Wait. What? Badlands, fucks the ass.
Yeah.
The Running
Man.
Off
my recommendation.
And Echo in the Canyon.
You may be seeing this.
Echo in the Canyon. You already tried to assign me, and I said, no, thank you,
now
buddy.
Now it's on home video.
Home video? What are you, from the fucking mid-90s? Home video.
You can watch it like VOD, video on demand.
Video on demand.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Home video's way off.
Would you like the home video, sir? How would you like this package?
How is home video different than video
on
demand?
Would you like it shrink-wrapped?
I didn't say it was on VHS.
Kind of sounded that way.
All right.
Hey, you know what?
Stupid thing to quibble over.
Hey.
Hey.
Back to the program.
Welcome back.
Ay, qué bonitos aquellos tiempos. Como olvidarlos nunca.
Yeah.
And
we're talking. Scene set in Mexico, Anderson. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly fruitful topic.
Surprisingly.
Yeah.
It's been a giant country, and they've made literally tens of thousands of movies country.
Tens of thousands. No,
there's been tens of thousands of movies that have probably taken place, at least partially in Mexico.
All of mine are English language, like American films that have a scene in Mexico.
Oh.
Just the way it goes.
I didn't do that at all. Brian.
Are you actual all, scene, like movie, like Mexican films?
All five of mine are entirely take place in Mexico, the entire movie.
I don't like that.
And I was having misgivings about doing the scenes thing because that even opened it more and there's already too much. So
too much.
I just, Brian, I just took it down to five movies that take place in Mexico. And if you need me to talk about a particular scene in that movie that works, fine. I'll do that.
That's what we're doing. We're doing scenes, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I pick movies that all take place in the Mexico down there.
Okay. Not also much for me. Well, mostly, yeah, I guess mostly. But we're gonna stretch it out. We're gonna go back. We're gonna go way back.
This time we're going back. Way back.
Way back.
And it goes a little something like this. Hit it.
You want me to start?
Sure, why not?
I'm going all the way back. 1948.
Ooh.
Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Yeah.
A film assigned to me.
I don't know if it really captures the spirit of this celebration of Mexico's independence.
Okay, well, funny you should mention that.
Bunch of white dudes down there.
Funny you should mention that. Treasure of the Sierra Madre, 1948, directed by John Huston, starring Humphrey Bogart, Walter Huston, Tim Holt. Oscars for Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Best Supporting Actor. The first father-son duo to win an Oscar for the same film, Walter Huston and John Huston. Number 30 on AFI's Top 100 Films. Stanley Kubrick's fourth favorite film.
Mm.
According to IMDb, Anderson,
mm-hmm.
I got some fun facts about this as it pertains to Mexico. And I'll get to my scene in a second. Apparently, just as John Huston was starting to shoot scenes in Tampico, Mexico, the production was shut down inexplicably by the local government. The cast and crew were at a complete loss to understand why, since the residents and government of Tampico had been so generous in days past. It turns out that a local newspaper printed a false story that accused the filmmakers of making a production that was unflattering to Mexico.
Mm.
Huston soon found out why the newspaper skewered him. When you want to do anything in Tampico, it was customary to slide a little money towards the editor of the newspaper, something the crew failed to do. Fortunately, two of Huston's associates went to bat for the director with the president of Mexico. The libelous accusations were dropped, and a few weeks later, the editor of the newspaper apparently was caught in the wrong bed and shot dead by a jealous husband.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that's some hypocrisy there.
That's right.
I don't know if it's even hypocrisy. It's like he's demanding to be have the palm greased. Kind of guy that would do that.
Director John Huston and art director John Hughes found the spot of filming after an exhaustive 8,000-mile scouting trip, through Mexico. It might have been scouring as well. The budget exceeded $3.5 million. This was the most expensive production ever mounted by Warner Brothers and one of the few early films to be shot off the studio lot, like on location in Mexico.
On location. Yeah, they didn't like the on location back then because they needed all the control they could get with the flimsy materials that they were using. Indeed. with the giant cameras.
And then to keep reusing them, right? Especially amongst Westerns. A lot of these made me think back to our old buddies, Cliff and...
Rick.
Cliff and Rick, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my favorite scene from this movie occurs at the very end of the film. I'm not going to give too much away, but there is a dust storm that two of the main characters have almost a laughing fit. They have found themselves in a situation they don't want to be in.
Right.
After searching for gold for the better part of 2 hours of the film, and there's a dust storm, and they laugh at not just the futility of it all, but the irony that they have. They're in a bad place, but in a much better place than they could be. So I'm not going to say too much. If you've seen this movie, which I hope you have, Treasure of the Sierra Madre is a very good movie. It's a classic. And the final scene in the dust storm is just that perfect ending to this man versus nature and man versus man quest that they find themselves upon.
Mm-hmm. It's a great movie. I absolutely love this movie.
Everyone knows the badges. You know, we don't got no sneaking badges. Mm-hmm. We have to show you no sneaking badges or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah, the oft misquoted.
Werner Herzog, one of his favorite movies, if not his favorite movie. I've spoken of the screening that I went to with him hosting numerous times.
And very good movie.
I won't regale the audience with that story again. I just won't do it, Brian. All right.
You should.
Hey, I feel like I had some boba today.
Boba, like the drink?
Yeah, I just had a craving, which I rarely do. I was at the mall with the boy.
Oh, interesting.
And I had to get him a helicopter because that was the promise if he got potty trained. And he's potty trained. Ah. So we were at the mall. I went to the old Target over there and got him a helicopter. Then I was passing a boba place. I'm like, you know, I feel like chewing some boba.
I got never boba. Liked boba.
I don't dislike it.
I'm jealous of
it. I rarely seek it out, but it just felt right. But here's the problem. Like it ended. He and I had some. it's dicey too, like sharing boba or sharing anything with a straw with a 2-year-old. Cause sure. A lot of backwash.
You don't wear that. Yeah. What's going in that straw or coming out of it?
Luckily, I couldn't see through the taro. I got the purple taro flavor, and I couldn't see whatever came out of his mouth back down the straw. Cause
out of sight, out of
one is water. It's really brutal. You just can't do it. But so it gets to the bottom. Now there's nothing but a few boba and some ice. And I was inhaling, trying to get those last boba, right? You can't let them escape. And I might be wrong, and it might be a psychosomatic thing occurring right now. This might not even be physically possible, but I sucked it down. Some stuff went down the wrong pipe. I coughed up a boba, but I'm fairly confident that one of the bobas went down into my lungs.
Oh no.
And I think I might have a boba in my lungs right now.
Well, what happens then?
Well, that becomes pneumonia probably like maybe as soon as tomorrow, and I'm not feeling too good. And I think that might have happened. I'm hoping I'm wrong.
I'm going to Google boba in the lung.
I did. Didn't find it. I found a bunch of articles about vape juice, how bad that is for you. But found a couple Reddit subreddits where people were talking about food, what happens to it when it goes in the lungs.
I imagine you can cough that. What happens to food?
If it's big enough and it becomes a problem, like the mucus can't take care of it, it starts to decompose and it turns into a massive infection in your lungs, ultimately pneumonia.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that I got it out.
Yeah.
I can't be sure though. And I'm feeling some weird, got the headache, bad headache. Ooh. But I attribute that to the coughing. We'll see. Mm. Hopefully I don't have boba lung though, because I don't think boba lung is something that anybody wants. All right.
We'll keep an eye on that.
Sorry for that transgression. Moving on, my number five. This comes from just last year. And
don't say Roma.
I was gonna keep it off the list, but if we're doing scenes, Brian, that scene, Roma haunts me. It really does. I did not
really
enjoy
seeing it.
Roma, I did not enjoy watching it so much. It wasn't a chore. I didn't dislike it. At times, it felt like a chore, but not really. I appreciate it, and I really appreciate Cuarón's ability.
Yeah,
to
I agree. You can appreciate that movie if you
switch gears from one film to the next. I mean, of all the working directors, and Kubrick's name gets thrown around quite a bit with a number of the masters that we have: Villeneuve, Nolan, obviously. People suggest, you know, this director might be our Stanley Kubrick. I do think that Alfonso Cuarón might be the closest thing to our Kubrick because of his ability to switch gears from one film to the next and make such different toned movies.
Okay.
And Roma was obviously very personal to him, very black and white to us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things in that quiet, reserved movie do stick with me, particularly the military training scene where she goes back to confront
yes,
the man who wronged her with the implantation and whatnot, and watching him do his thing in unison, leading the others, and her doing the tree of life pose, right, with the yoga thing, and then the way he treats her once I think about that quite a bit, and that was a scene that took place in Mexico City, actually on the outskirts of Mexico City. She had to track him down in a small little pueblo. Pueblo, is that something?
Is it a pueblo? I thought pueblo was like a building.
I don't. Turns out I'm not Mexican. But yeah, that scene, so that's my number five. That's the most recent by far. And I'm sticking with it. Roma's military training scene. Everything that happens in that scene, it's a long scene too.
Pueblo is a village.
It unfolds slowly and ends tragically, I guess. No one dies, but I think about that prick quite a bit and how I would like to stomp him. I hate him, Brian.
He's not a good man.
I don't like how he treated her.
He left her high and dry with a baby.
But that's my number five scene/movie that takes place in Mexico.
I like this. You can talk about the movie, pull out a scene that sticks with you or that your favorite scene or most impactful. Number four for me, not quiet. The opposite of quiet and reserved and observant. 1960, Magnificent Seven. Mm. The final shootout scene.
You're not going with the updated version?
I never saw it.
You're not being a Brian and doing the Antoine Fuqua version?
Starring Denzel Washington. Directed by John Sturges. Starring Yul Brynner. Steve McQueen. Yul Brynner on the Mount Rushmore, bald man.
Mm-hmm.
Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, Robert Vaughn, James Coburn, and Eli Wallach. According to IMDb, Anderson filming took place in Mexico at a time, much like Treasure of the Sierra Madre, when the country did not take kindly to Hollywood productions due to the controversy surrounding a film called Veracruz. You ever see Veracruz?
No.
A 1954 film apparently was not flattering to Mexico, and the Mexican government and populace, I guess, did not take kindly to Hollywood productions. It was agreed they could shoot there as long as the Mexican censors were allowed on set, Anderson, to dictate what could and could not be shown, so as to avoid another disaster. Yes, Mexican censors, get this. They required the peasants, the people. So the Magnificent Seven is about this group of mercenaries who go to get
white
hired.
Men.
Yes, in the U.S., they come to Mexico and protect this village from Calavera, Eli Wallach. He's terrorizing the town. And they say, come protect us, seven strong men with guns. And they go there. The Mexican censors required the peasants, Anderson, to always be wearing clean clothes, despite the fact that they were farmers. Mm-hmm. This caused a huge delay because it meant dozens of intentionally dirty costumes, pick that up, had to be thoroughly cleaned before filming could commence, which is absurd. But here we have it. In that final scene, that final shootout, which takes up half of that third act, 55 characters are killed on screen, most in that final shootout. During the first shootout, 13 of Calvera's men are seen to have been killed, with a further 24 killed during that final battle. It's a fantastic scene.
All right.
I mean, it goes on and on, but it's fantastic.
A lot of reading.
Fun facts.
I sidestepped this with your first pick or your number five pick because I didn't want to go down the PC road. I don't like to be accused of being PC.
I
am married to a social worker, and things are pointed out to me that if I lived in a vacuum, they would not be, obviously, right. Or if I did not have social worker as a spouse living out here in California. I don't like the PC, Brian. Obviously, I'm not a big
well established.
However. I am wondering if you're missing the spirit once again of this this exercise that we're doing here. So far, your first two movies, and I'm hoping this is not a theme that's going to run the length of all five, are pretty much just talking about how ridiculous the rules were that the Mexicans set up to allow these Americans to go down there and shoot on their land. That's kind of like the direction that you're going.
It's
ironic that it's, we're doing this. Mexico's independence of the Spaniards, and here you are acting like a Spaniard.
The rest of my list does not include as many fun facts about the Mexican government at in the 1950s and 60s. That said, I did not have the strict criteria that you did about celebrating Mexican heritage.
I mean, that's the point of it.
It's not. There's literally top five scenes set in Mexico.
Because inspired by
Mexican Independence Day.
Yeah.
We're hinging it to a holiday, but I did not choose scenes that portray Mexico good or bad. They're just great scenes.
Fair enough. I just feel like the majority of the fun facts that we've learned from you thus far is what pricks the Mexicans can be when white men try to shoot down there.
This is also many decades ago.
Number two for me.
It's funny, when you went the PC route, I thought you were going to say, because the thing that stood out to me, and I watched a lot of scenes for this episode, was how they would cast not always Mexican people to play Mexicans. It was often a very awkward
brown face, they call it.
Yeah, very awkward
tan face.
Clearly other races or colors, and it was awkward at times, but you also have to take these movies for the era in which they existed. Like Ty Cobb was a horrible racist and no one liked him, but he's a great baseball player. He's one of the greatest of his generation. You can't dismiss that. He would sharpen spikes.
What they would do with the white extras that they wanted to play Mexican, they would have them set up shop down there like a couple weeks earlier and just have them lay out on the beach.
Get tan.
That was what they. Not a well known fact, but that's the case.
Number four for you,
El Mariachi.
El Mariachi.
El Mariachi.
You never talked about that movie.
1992. I've talked about Desperado. I've talked about the.
Do you even like El Mariachi?
I love El Mariachi. El Mariachi. In fact, I watched in preparation of this episode. I watched probably half the fucking movie, trying to find a scene that I wanted to highlight for the sake of this episode, rather than just say. You see, also the problem if we're picking scenes, we have to get more detailed. I'd rather just say El Mariachi.
And leave it at that.
Yeah.
Drop the mic.
Great movie. Right. I don't have to fucking dig and talk about particular scenes, but you've seen that.
It is more work. Yeah, I did see it.
Yeah.
You're going to find this hard to believe. I like Desperado better.
Well, yeah, Desperado's a better movie. It's a superior film. However, there's a lot to appreciate in El Mariachi.
There's a lot of rough around the edges charm.
And it's been years since I've seen this. It's probably been well over 10 years ago. Longer. I've seen it a couple times, but... fun facts. If you want some fun facts, Robert Rodriguez was trying to make this down here, and the Mexican government, they all surrounded him and threw out their hands and just looked at him and, they did a little thing. That's not true. There's a lot of
so you're making jokes.
Yeah, it's a joke.
I'm reading facts.
Mm-hmm. Facts. Wikipedia facts.
That's right. Yeah, IMDb technically.
Mm-hmm. IMDb facts.
Spent a lot of time on that website.
You gave me a lot of shit for ever giving any credence to the IMDb trivia facts.
And here we are.
Yeah, here we are. So there's a lot of back and forth with how much did it actually cost to get made. There's a lot of rumors. I don't know that it could possibly still be true that Robert Rodriguez was lying all the while, because the story is this. It cost less than $10,000, $7,000 it cost him to make it.
It was in the era where you got press for not spending a lot of money.
And it was a big deal back in 1992. Exactly. And then it turned out, stories started to surface that he actually spent $100,000 on the movie. And then all these years later, what seems to have settled as truth is he did spend south of $10,000 on El Mariachi. And then I think it was Columbia. I think Columbia bought it. Anyways, one of the big studios bought it back in the early 90s. And they ended up putting $200,000 into the transfer and some post sound work
to make it theater ready,
as well as on top of that, a ton of money in the marketing to get it theater ready, because they saw the potential of this movie. They saw
they could feel the sea change too.
Mexican American audience that they wanted to target.
Well, it was an audience for independent film on top of that.
And as well as that. And they went for it, and it became, it set all sorts of records as far as the lowest budgeted movie
profitability
ever. But they really used that in the marketing, how cheap this movie was. So I tend to believe that it probably cost somewhere along $10,000. He probably called in a lot of favors and whatnot, and $200,000 seems a little high to transfer it to film, but that's what they say. So El Mariachi.
That's what it took back then.
I know I like this movie. I've seen it a couple of times, but like I said, it's been a long time until this week, and I was watching a number of scenes, and it's just a lot of goof in there, a lot of fun, and he's just having a good time with camera angles and swish pans and camera movements, the actual operation of the camera. Like, he was doing a lot of stuff to make up for the low quality of the actual image. And I guess if I had to pick one scene, there's so many good scenes here. And it's a really good movie, guys. You can do yourselves a favor if you have not seen El Mariachi, which is what put Robert Rodriguez on the map. And then Desperado, I actually saw before El Mariachi. Mm-hmm. And I went back and watched El Mariachi afterwards. I saw Desperado in the theater. Really liked it. Really appreciated that Antonio Banderas for the first time ever. But it's a really, really well-made action movie. But El Mariachi, much cheaper. Where was I going with that?
It's cheaper.
Less sophisticated.
Tarantino.
Throwing names out. Was not talking Tarantino. guess if I had to pick one scene,
Antonio Banderas.
It's not even a violent scene. It's a comedic scene where the actual El Mariachi, he walks in, he's looking for work in a bar, and the bartender is just like, "Hey, we don't have any work. I don't need El Mariachis anymore. I don't need mariachis anymore because I got one guy over there. I pay one guy, and he's like the full band." Right. And then the guy pops up, and it's all like very cartoony. It's almost like Coen Brothers-esque, but more lampoonish. And he stands up with his synthesizer, and he puts it on two bar stools, and it's got all these sound effects that it's doing. He does this and that, and he gets it ready, and then he just starts playing, and it sounds like a full mariachi band. And he's just standing there smiling in this pretty much empty bar.
I forgot about
this. The mariachi is just kind of looking over, going, "That's my competition now. Right. How do I compete with that?" And the bartender is like, "See, I pay one guy. That's all I need." And then he takes his synthesizer, puts it back on the table, and takes his position back in the corner of the bar, the synthesizer player, with his sombrero down.
Slung low.
I'm just sitting here collecting money to do nothing now again. But that's probably my favorite scene. There's also the mix-up of the guitar case was fantastic. Really like that El Mariachi. Desperado. Better movie.
All right. I almost included a few scenes from Desperado on my list.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, do yourself, if you've not seen any of these, because it's been a number of years, and I know we have some younger listeners, watch that El Mariachi. I think you can rent it for a couple bucks, and then watch Desperado, and then stop.
Oh, and then you're good.
Yeah, you don't need to watch Once Upon a Time in Mexico, because Johnny Depp, and it's shot on video, and it just, it looks as bad as El Mariachi. And it was ungood. Ungood, Brian.
Magnificent Seven streaming on Stars. If you have Stars.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, was I going to start doing that?
I should start doing that. I fuck this up every time. Fix my gate. Okay, here we go.
Sorry, I'm getting some life altering texts at the moment, and if I was a professional, I wouldn't even mention that. I would just power through. But yeah, shit's hitting the fan in Andy's world right now, and. Trying to talk about Mexican movies over here. You know what I mean?
Trying to broadcast like goddamn professional.
Fuck. All right.
Things are going fine?
Yeah, I'm just going to turn the phone off so I can't hear the incoming.
That's probably smart.
Shrapnel that's coming my way.
There's Bouncing Betty right next to you. I didn't even know it.
Bouncing Betty's right next to me?
That's right.
Who's that?
There's a Bouncing Betty. You know about the landmine? You step up the landmine, it bounces up and explodes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Goes up.
Killed a lot of good men.
Mm-hmm.
In Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Fix my gate.
Brian.
Can you fix my gate?
Just talk normally, because that never happens to me. You ever notice that?
I didn't notice that.
Go. What's your number three?
Number three. Very different film.
Mm.
Very different scene.
Mm.
This is one that, as I'm doing my research, I had almost forgotten about, because I it's not... If you give me any grief on any of my picks, Anderson, this will be the one. But luckily, you're distracted enough right now that I don't think you're going to give me any grief.
Mm-hmm.
An emotional scene.
No!
An emotional scene. How dare you? A scene that I got a little dusty in the theater when I saw this 2 years ago.
What a puss.
2 years ago in the theater. Got dusty. Not going to lie.
All right, Brian. Coco.
Coco.
A Coco.
Coco.
So, directed so far, it's two movies that were made by white men, and she showcased how the Mexican government pretty much just blackmailed them for money. Like the dirty bastards that they are, and now you're talking about a cartoon.
Coco said in New Mexico.
Made by...
It's also said in the afterlife.
A lot of white people.
The Remember Me scene from Coco, the end, the scene towards the end, where, and you could see it coming too. God, I saw it coming a mile away when that fucking kid goes back to Grandma Coco, to Mama Coco, and he gets the guitar. And I'm like, if this fucking kid sings this fucking song, I'm going to fucking lose my mind. And sure enough, little Miguel sings Remember Me. I should have had the clip. I should have Remember Me. It's a great song. He sings Remember Me to Mama Coco, jogging her memory, getting her out of almost a catatonic state, and remembering Anderson, her lost love, and preserving his memory and spirit so that he may live forever. Because if she had forgotten him, he'd be
yes,
gone forever.
Yes, I think about that all the time. And it's a real thing, too. I love the entire idea behind that movie.
Streaming on Netflix. Streaming on Netflix right now, which I'm sure will be a part of the Disney Plus channel in November. Mm-hmm. But you can see this now on Netflix. Coco is a really fantastic movie. And just that scene, I wouldn't say it devastated me, but it's fucking, I was like, no, not this. No, it's not going to sing the song. And it still got me in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
In the gut.
Mm-hmm. Number three for you. Number three for me. Very different movie.
No one heard me say that.
I love that Coco.
Coco.
I love it.
You're like the Coco.
Not on my list, but mm-hmm. I love it. You know what it is, though?
It's set in Mexico.
Post Tenebra Lux, Brian.
Oh, no. Please tell me there's a beheading.
2012 Post Tenebra Lux. This is a twofer. I'm going to go with two different scenes. They both take place in the same field, yet they are separated in the movie. They have a lot of other scenes, unconnected scenes, Brian.
Oh, really?
In between the two scenes that take place in the soccer pitch in the middle of the jungle. But the opening sequence of his little girl.
Look at the image. At
yeah, the image. She, Brian, showed me the image of Post Tenebra Lux on Just Watch, which is the devil.
It's a glowing Satan cock.
There's a lot of things to be interpreted in this movie. It is a hipster pick for sure. Not on my part.
It's not enjoyable.
It's got the hooks. It gets the brain hooks in you, Brian. You don't forget Post Tenebra, but the opening sequence is shot 4:3 with this weird lens that he had created, so it kind of makes everything blurred on the outside, morphed on the outside, and the image doubled up a little bit. And Carlos Regadas's little 2-year-old, maybe 3-year-old daughter is running through this pitch. this soccer field in the middle of the jungle.
I did not enjoy this video
in Mexico. This is the opening sequence, which is
experience.
You've never seen anything like what he shoots with this weird lens of his little girl running about this open field with many dogs. You'd imagine they're strays. Mm. Because it is Mexico, and like you see a pregnant pit bull with very large nipples, and there's puddles because it had been raining recently, and she's just running, kind of following the camera, and it's like this wide, not fisheye quite, but it's a very wide lens, and then you see like galloping fucking wild horses just running like maybe 40, 50 yards away, and she continues to like laugh and enjoy herself. I was watching this earlier in the week with Atticus, and he was transfixed this entire like 5-minute opening sequence, and then it gets darker and darker, and then the lightning comes in, and it's just... that sticks with you, and it's like nothing you'd ever seen, and it's a fucking audacious open to anything.
Yeah, there's some unforgettable stuff in the film. Like I said, I didn't enjoy watching it, but there's some stuff that I'll never, you know, put it on my mind.
And it's one of those movies where I get it. It's a fine line, especially with me, because I know that there's a very good chance that me, being me, could have watched this after knowing the critics loved it and fucking hated it. And I was prepared to do that. But same with like Tree of Life. Like something happens inside of me. I can't quite pinpoint what it is. And I was like, I love this.
All right.
I love it.
I can't.
And I
can't
just as easily hate it. And I think maybe if I saw it at a different time in my life, I would hate it. Like maybe if I saw it like 5 years earlier, that version of me might have hated it. I don't know.
Right time, right place.
It's hard. That's the thing with like, I guess like with art, right? And everything's so fucking subjective. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is. But I really appreciated that opening. And then on the same field later in the film, there's the beheading that Brian talked about briefly there that is also
shocking,
unforgettable.
It's a self-beheading.
It's a self-beheading, and it's not gruesome. But it's still shocking. Like we shouldn't even be saying it because
there's no way to, yeah.
At this point, I guess, when I saw it, I didn't know about the beheading.
You brought it up before on the show.
I didn't know about the beheading, though, when I first saw it, and I remember going like, what is he? Is he trying to pull his head off? And then it actually looks pretty real. It's from behind. You don't see his face, but it looks pretty fucking real. And it's like, holy shit. Yeah. So post Tenebra Lux. And it's not like Carlos Regattas, who made, he's made movies before, and he's made one since. And it's not like I'm rushing out to see, cause it was a bit of a chore. It was a bit hard to get through, but it's investment watching. And I'm glad I saw it. Cause it's in my head. Now I could sit down and watch this again right now, the whole movie, and be like, oh, I completely forgot about that scene. Because there are a bunch of seemingly unconnected scenes. I'm sure it all makes sense to him.
Right. There's sort of vignettes, but like also symbolic vignettes, metaphorical vignettes.
And somebody who would really love this movie and try and, you know, explain to me that the reason I don't love it as much as them is because I don't understand it. Like, I hate that person. Okay. I hate them. But I like this movie.
Fair enough.
You know what I'm saying?
My number two, coming up after the break, is also an opening shot, but we'll talk about that. After this.
Oh, Brian, they're back.
Who's that?
Blue Chew.
Oh, your favorite.
You chew the blue. You chew the blue, Brian.
Chew the blue. You can use that, guys.
You pop that blue pill there, and it's a performance enhancement for the bedroom, Brian.
Mm.
It lets you go extra rounds. You don't need to have ED. To use Blue Chew. The little blue pill.
Can I ask you a question? If you have ED, can you use
Blue Absolutely. Chew? Okay, right. Yes, but I'm the kind of guy, I'm so open with everything. Like if I had ED, if I ever do, I promise you, I won't talk about it here. That's not the place to do that. I'd talk about it, on a program probably, because I'm very open about everything that happens in my life. Don't have it right now, but I have the Blue Chew. I've used the Blue Chew. I like the Blue Chew, and it makes me like a power hitter.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into it. But it gives me it gives me a little extra. It makes it more fun. I can tell you that.
Okay.
So what's
take a word for it?
You don't want to try the Blue Chew? Are you afraid of its power? Are you afraid?
I'm afraid of what it might do. Not to Christy, but to the neighbors.
Like that's how I let the wife know that it's time. Like I take it out of the side drawer and
she hears a little.
Yeah, she hears me rip open the packaging and she goes, all right, here, I guess it's happening soon. I guess we're trying to make Atticus a sibling soon here.
Well, where do you go?
Blue Chew.
For the offer.
Here's a great deal for you. You go to visit bluechew.com and get your first order for free when you use our promo code, that's TFE. Just pay $5 for shipping and you go to bluechew.com, use promo code TFE and you pick however much you would like to get for. They have three different levels, like the occasional banger, the average banger, and the I like to bang every night banger.
The bang bang.
You watching that couples counseling at all?
How dare you?
On Showtime. No, you watch that?
Never heard of it.
There was a guy there like, and he's like, I need to bang every single day. And if I'm not banging my wife, I feel like she doesn't love me. Like that guy would use a Blue Chew very well.
He's a poster child.
BlueChew.com.
Anderson, time again to make our picks for the betonline.ag contest for Podcast One Sportsnet.
That's right.
We make all our bets on betonline.ag, and you're going to help me, Anderson.
I am.
Make our picks this week for the NFL. Okay. So here are the we need to make five picks.
Five picks.
If we win, by the way, over all the other podcasts, five of our listeners are going to win $100 each. That's $500 for our listeners.
I like the incentive.
Okay, so here we go.
Because I want our listeners to win. Of course I do.
So here are the six games I'm considering. I feel good about them, but I want you to tell me which one to drop. So we're going to make five picks. Ravens at home over the Cardinals.
Purple against red.
That's right. Birds against birds. Mm-hmm. On the road, all the rest of these teams are on the road. I got the Patriots over the Dolphins.
Pats.
Chiefs over the Raiders. 49ers over the Bengals.
Mm.
Chargers over the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
The Cowboys over the Redskins. One of these teams I got to drop.
I would drop the Cowboys and Redskins because you never know. With a rivalry that, you never know what could happen.
And the Redskins was a little frisky last week.
Yeah, they
played well.
Yeah, I would drop that one.
Drop of the Cowboys. So there you go. Those are our five picks, you guys. If we win over all the other podcasts on the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge, we will be offering $100. To five listeners each, $500 for our show's listeners. Visit betonline.ag. Use the promo code podcast1, O-N-E, for a 50% sign-up bonus that you can use on any sport, not just football, college football, whatever you want. Baseball playoffs coming up.
XFL's coming.
Indeed. BetOnline. XFL futures. Who's going to win? BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts.
And wrapping up the spots this week, Brian, the last one's coming in. Is that Carnival Row.
Carnival
We've been talking
Row.
About it the last few
we really
weeks
have it.
Now.
I've been. It's pretty good.
And it's the new bingeable show you can watch on the old Amazon over there. It's a one-hour fantasy drama series starring Orlando Bloom and Cara Delevingne. And the series is set in a Victorian fantasy world filled with mythological immigrant creatures whose exotic homelands were invaded by the empires of man, Brian.
Get this, Anderson. They have a dangerous love affair.
Oh.
Despite an increasingly intolerant society.
There's the fairy, I bet she can do some magical things.
I would imagine she could probably conjure some spells.
Because you didn't see any of this. I spot checked this one. I watched different parts of different scenes, you know, because I got a lot going on right now with the promotion and whatnot with my movie. But I did find time to sit down and watch some Carnival Row just to make sure that I was signing off on something that was good. This thing looks like I said, like World of Warcraft, but like real.
Really?
And, you know, it's
World of Warcraft isn't real.
Definitely shades of the Game of Thrones. Okay. And it feels a little bit like Taboo.
It is on Amazon Prime Video, you guys. Available now to watch Carnival Row only on Amazon Prime Video. I'm really enjoying this. It's good music selection. Do you have the name of the band or the
El Forahi? El Forahido?
Let's go with that.
De Hokipira.
Those aren't words.
Chipira. It's Isaac's dad.
Thanks, Isaac.
It's in the show notes, so you'll.
I'll take a shot at it later.
No, like in Espanol and Escuela, todos Fs.
Yeah, all Fs.
Yeah. In Spanish class, in school. Yeah.
That was very poor.
All I learned to say.
That's very poor in Spanish. Number two for me.
Go ahead.
Where are you going?
I have to go. Get a beer.
Do what you got to do. Going back again, Anders. Going back again. To 1958.
Damn it. I hate when this fucking happens, but we are lined up on this one.
Really?
You son of a bitch.
Is it the opening scene for Touch of Evil? Touch of Evil.
Tis. It's a great
Orson Welles' Touch of Evil. It's just called Touch of Evil. It is a fantastic opening long shot in this film, Touch of Evil. You guys, if you haven't seen Touch of Evil, this is worth a rental. I like Magnificent Seven. I like Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Touch of Evil is fucking awesome. And the opening shot is really, really good. Charlton Heston and Janet Leigh. Okay, so I want to set this up because it's like it's the first thing in the movie.
And the very first thing you see is a clock, like a timer, a kitchen timer.
Yeah. And the pullbacks reveal a ticking time bomb, yes. Right? Dynamite strapped to
and some hands.
And hands.
You don't see close the face.
It's a reminder of why Orson Welles is a really great filmmaker. It's very Hitchcockian. The first thing you see is that ticking time bomb in these hands, and the hands immediately put into the trunk of a car, right? Close the trunk, and whoever's hands you see, they run away off screen. So now all you know is that there's this car and this ticking time bomb in the trunk, and Janet Leigh and that comes later. A couple get into the car and they start driving, and they're driving slowly. They're driving slowly through the streets of Mexico, through the streets of, Los Robles, a.k.a. the Paris of the border. They're a well-to-do couple. They're driving a nice convertible through the streets of Los Robles. They're driving past, and as they drive out of frame, they drive off screen. Then they come back. You never, even though you lose sight of that car is, it's omnipresent. It's always there. It's always lurking either just off screen or just in the background or in the foreground. And it's that great tension of when's that fucking bomb going to go off? When's that fucking bomb going to go off? And it drives past Charlton Heston and Janet Leigh, who are like, they're out in the town right there, coming back across the border, which is another great thing about this scene. Like all the timestamp stuff, like people just wandering, you know, freely across the border, just to and fro across the border. The car keeps coming. The car keeps coming. The car goes ahead. Then the car comes back and the car turns left. Car turns right. It's back in frame. It's out of frame. And then, everyone stopping at the border to sort of check in with the border agents, and there comes the car. The car stopped. The car stopped right next to everybody. And what's going to happen? And then everyone, what's going to happen? I'm going to leave it at that. It's a great scene.
And great crane shots.
It's
tell
a one shot. It's a long shot.
It's a oneer for sure. And what's fun with this, especially if you love movies and you've watched a bunch of them, and you're looking at this time capsule film from 1958 made by a master of his time, and you know that they were just pushing the limits, and they spent a lot of time saying, "Can we pull this off?" And it's very self-aware, and I don't.
It's showy, but it's great. Like you can get away with showy.
Maybe if you don't watch a lot of movies, maybe you're just completely sucked into that scene, and it's really effective. And maybe that's what they're going for. But I definitely get the sense that they're going for, let's impress our peers with this shot. Let's show
what
you can do if you push the envelope.
It's a gauntlet throwdown because it's the first scene of this movie. And I think if I'd done the research correctly, Orson Welles had like been living in Europe. He had like been away from filmmaking for a little while, so it was kind of a very anticipated return.
Yeah, and the rest of the movie. It takes place in Mexico, and I think it's a little overrated because the end just doesn't stick the landing for me. I wasn't a fan
of... The best part of the movie is the opening scene.
It is kind of a little bit, I don't want to say downhill, and Orson Welles is great in this. I think it's... I like him way more in this than I do in Citizen Kane, but the end just... It doesn't hold up today. Mm. It doesn't hold up. It's goofy. And they got those giant fucking walkie-talkies that I know they can't help because that's what walkie-talkies looked like back then. But I mean, they look like props for like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Honey, I'm Shrinking.
They're massive. Yeah,
that's fair.
Massive.
Yeah, the rest of the movie doesn't quite live up to the incredible bar raised in that first scene. But holy shit, that's great.
All right. So that's my number two, too.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't like it when we line up at all. It makes me feel icky.
Number one for me. Probably not going to line up on this.
June Hannah. June Hannah.
Well done. Number one for me.
I can't stop saying June Hannah.
I'll be honest, Anderson.
June Hannah?
I cheated a little bit.
I
cheated. Number one for me.
Calling your wife right now.
Two scenes from the same movie.
Ah, Brian, that's a
But cheat. They're two individual scenes, and they're two great scenes, and they're not related, aside from the fact they take place in Mexico. I mean, they're like the back-to-back scenes. These are different parts of the movie. I was thinking about it, and I really have to rank Sicario as one of my favorite movies at this point. Enough Time Has Passed came out 4 years ago. Is it your number one?
No.
Oh, good.
No.
4 years ago, the aforementioned Denis Villeneuve, a master working at his craft today.
They say he's the modern day Kubrick.
Written by Taylor Sheridan, my one B, because I like it just a little bit less than my 1A, is the shootout scene at the border where they're trying. They have to the federal agents. They have to extract the brother of Diaz, the head of the cartel. They extract him and they extradite him. They literally take him in like a Syria convoy, or a convoy of SUVs, and they go to cross the border back to the U.S. with their prisoner. But they get stuck in this endless sea of cars. Anderson, it's just a mass of cars trying to get back across the border, and they spot as they're sitting there, like, you know, because it's pretty obvious who they are. They're surrounded by cops. They're in these big blacked out SUVs. They spot some suspicious looking thugs in a car nearby who turn out to be there to kill them, and a brief but brutal and violent shootout ensues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. All right.
It's a fantastic scene.
Okay.
It's white knuckle. Nothing, though, compared to my 1A. Oh, that scene jumped to the top of the list as soon as I thought of it. The scene at the end of the film, I'm not going to say too much because maybe there's some people out there who haven't seen Sicario, but the scene where Benicio del Toro pulls off a one-man home invasion in the name of vengeance.
Is that right?
And you find out who the Sicario, the titular Sicario, really is, and really what Benicio...
Brian, you're saying way too much. Just stop it.
Benicio del Toro is a man of mystery in this film. You don't really know his backstory. You don't really know what he's doing there.
I know we don't see eye to eye on this, and I'm fine with that because I like not seeing eye to eye with you. I enjoy that. But
the home invasion.
The two Sicario movies, Days of Soldado, is my. I like that one more. If I had to sit down and watch,
you're an inferior person.
Wrong, but if I had to sit down and watch one of them again right now, it would be that one.
It'd
be the sequel.
That is absurd.
And I do believe that it has a lot to do with me having relished in all five seasons of Breaking Bad. I've said this before, and then your blind spot to that helps you enjoy smaller versions of it.
See, this is what TV has done to you. Mm-hmm. It's made you unable to appreciate a beautiful film.
I appreciate it. I've seen it in grander scale with the Breaking Bad.
Ironic, I'm smaller screen.
Very, very similar.
Smaller screen.
Uh huh. Where was the last time you saw Sicario?
Oh God, I don't know why.
Probably on the small screen.
Oh yeah, but I'll never forget.
You're the kind of guy that watches things on phones. That's the kind of guy you are.
It's a derisively on phones.
Like flip phones. Like you're like, yeah, I can see it.
I watched Jack of All Trades on a phone.
The scene that I remember most in the two Sicarios is the resurrection, as it were, in the gravel pit of Benicio del Toro with the
pretty
bandage
dumb.
Around
pretty,
his
bit, face. Of, bit of a stretch.
That's what I remember most. And of course the bodies in the walls. The
bodies in the walls is a great opening scene. That was in Mexico though. Would have made my list. It was.
It's true, right? It was right on the border.
That's right.
Right before Mexico. It was connected with tunnels though.
So yes, I mean, absolutely. But it took place on American soil.
Hey, look, I'm not taking anything away from Sicario. It's a masterful film.
The
for
scene
sure.
with John Bernthal is so great. So great.
The fact that she does nothing to propel the story. She's just along for the ride.
Like she's a proxy for the audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You take her character out of that story and the plot stays the exact same.
Oh, I disagree. Well, okay. The plot stays the same,
yes.
But the impact, the plot that...
I'm not talking about the audience right now. I'm talking about the actual story. Like, we don't exist, Brian. The movie exists.
No,
and the story and the character.
I'm with you.
You take her out.
I'm with you.
And like all those things still happen.
All those things still happen. You're 100% right. The problem becomes the thing that made the first one special was the Emily Blunt character, because she was proxy for the audience. We saw her loss of innocence. She went in as a very sort of like principled, like I'm doing things by the book.
Right,
this is
right,
what
right.
we do things.
We've all seen that before.
Fine, but in the context of this story, she was the one who
we didn't need her to like ease us into the story. Just give us the fucking raw shit.
I disagree.
The second one,
because then you end up with the second one, which is a less special movie. It's just shit that happens, as opposed to this character is spiraling down an emotional tunnel.
All right, but her storyline didn't really impact me at all in the first one. And
disagree.
A movie. Well, no, you can't tell me how I feel.
The scene with
it
her
didn't impact.
The scene with her and Benicio at the end was.
Not,
magical. Oh, it's so great.
Listen to me. A movie where shit just happens. a movie where shit just happens, and that happens a lot, especially in sequels, especially in It too. It's just a bunch of shit happening.
Yeah.
Like that's what that's the best review you can give, the most apt review of
bunch of
It Chapter Two. I want to see a listener art of a poster.
The IT and shit.
That could work. And it's like a quote from the film artist, like a bunch of shit just happens. Yeah, because
IT and shit is in the script, the font.
And I know the effect they are going for. This is gonna be great. We have so many different characters. We can like be bouncing around with all of their insanity that's happening with their flashbacks and stuff. But it's just one fucking like horror room after the other. Mm-hmm. And it feels like you're like, you ever been in one of those, like, what are they called?
Like an escape room?
Not an escape room, but it's like where people
house
like
of horrors.
It's a house of horrors. And they pop up all over the place now. I guess Halloween's so pop. And that's what it felt like. Like you just go from one little like, and I'm sure that there's going to be plenty probably this year with things from It too. Cause that's how Chapter Two. That's how it works. Like they actually take things from movies and they put them in their little experience. And it'll have like a wall. It looks like a wall, but it's made of latex and like hands will be coming out and like touching you.
I like that.
And that's what It Chapter, a bunch of shit just happening.
But shit happens. Shit happens.
That and Sicario. All right. Number one for me. All right. We're already there, huh? Number one.
Priestnef.
Sin Nombre. I mean, this is a movie that almost needs to be banned from my list.
It's a pretty great movie.
It's masterful.
It's so what scene would you put on?
Oh, it's easy. This is easy.
Where the girl hits the rock.
There's so many great fucking scenes in Sin Nombre. I love the Sin Nombre so much.
The rock?
Nameless. Sin Nombre. It's the first time that I had ever heard of Cary Fukunaga. And
aforementioned.
Most of us have heard of Cary Fukunaga, especially if you listen to this program now. But Sin Nombre is what put him on the map. Before this, this is his directorial debut. He was a cinematographer, and it shows.
It shows.
This movie looks fantastic. And it's rare that I see a movie where like a giant, sweeping like plot device, an occurrence happens where it's so simple, but I've never seen anything like it before. And that happens in this movie with the feel and the action that takes place, or a lack of action that takes place on top of the train. And after something happens with one character on top of the train and the rest of the characters who are also on top of the train trying to get from point A to point B, realize that this individual is unpredictable, dangerous, and could kill them. And their reaction and how they just have to huddle and kind of like hovel on top of the train for hours. It turns into a couple of days, and it was like a wild beast was
stalking them. It was like a Richard Parker situation.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that. And the feeling that I got watching that, where it was just like, I've never really felt this watching a movie before, and it feels so fresh and dangerous and new, and I loved it. I loved it. It was so simple, but it was just like, that giant group of people who are all innocent and just trying to get to a better place and better lives for them and their families. And then they had to deal with this guy who we as an audience liked too, but they didn't know.
Of course, they are terrified.
And he's just there, and like they're sharing this really tight space that's out in the open air though, but they can't go anywhere. They're kind of trapped.
It's a great construct.
It's such a great construct. It's more than a scene. Like it goes on for a while.
It's almost like the second act.
Yeah. But Sin Nombre it's all about MS-13 and a character losing his girlfriend.
He wants to get out that life.
Sin Nombre.
He wants to get out that vida.
That's my number one. 2009. Don't have anything more to say about it. It's just, you should watch Sin Nombre.
Bordering on bannable at this point.
I know, it really is.
Streaming on Stars.
Oh, good to know. Stars got a lot of good shit.
They do. I'm after looking into a
Stars might have some people with taste over there working for them. Acquiring.
They might.
Yeah. Listener list.
Please.
Thank you to Chad Yuki for once again coming up with our listener list. Just over 5% of the listeners went with the opening scene from Touch of Evil.
Oh, really? Oh, nice.
I'm not familiar with what that is.
It's a really, really good scene from a classic movie.
See, that one fucking listener, I have to point out that he doesn't like it, that I do that. Now I have to do it because I don't want him to feel like he went.
You're compelled.
Brian, I'm so petty that like if I catch a lizard.
Oh, I know you are.
Like a lizard's like drowning in my pool. I'll get it out and I'll like take it over to like, you know, dry land and let it go. And then it runs off. It bothers me that lizard thinks that it escaped me. Like in his little lizard brain and thinks like, oh, yeah. Oh,
I got away from that predator.
I got away from that predator. No, I saved your dumb ass. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't want people to think that. Number four
should
is.
Break his little wrist just to
show his
boss. Message, yeah.
Number four for the listeners is the titty twister reveal scene from Dusk Till Dawn.
I assume that's just the second half of the movie.
A little over 5%. That's the second half, yes. Juarez convoy scene Sicario.
So good.
6.3% of
that scene goes on forever because the convoy goes into Juarez. They get Diaz's brother. Then there's the border shootout, which is my scene.
Number two for the listeners. This is shocking. It's not on your list. 6.3% went with opening scene long take from Spectre.
That is a good scene. I don't like that movie. And it was good. I had no problem with that scene.
And the number one scene from our listeners. Hey, by the way, I should probably point this out towards the top of the show too. If you would like to be a part of these polls that we do every single week, I post the question or I post what we're going to be talking about every Monday on both Facebook and the Twitter. And
Film Vault on both.
The Film Vault. And I ask you, I tell you what the topics could be. And then I ask you guys what your favorite one is. And then Chad Yuki goes through and he tallies them all up for us. And he is very good at doing so. And he's got it to the point where he's giving us percentages, which I love. It's something we've never done before. So if you'd like to be a part of that, look for that on Mondays. I always try and start the week off with a little like, hey, this is what's coming on. It's going down with the Film Vault at the end of the week.
Nice.
And this coming Monday, you're going to see, hey, what's your, actually, do I, I don't think we do it.
Listener top. Well,
because. Yeah, no, we do. I think we do. So yeah, what are you most anticipate? What are you most excited about that's coming out the fall season, fall, winter season? Number one for the listeners, after all that, is the shootout at the border scene from Sicario.
They separated that from the convoy scene. All right, that's a great scene.
Two from Sicario.
That's a great scene.
12% of our listeners.
Do you remember that scene? It's a white knuckle scene where they're in the car and like they see the guys, they know they're there to kill them, but it's like, we can't make a move till they make a move.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. It's
fucking great scene.
And like they think everything's cool too. At first, I think that they're
on their way.
Yeah. But not so much. No, it's a really good movie. I'm telling you though, Brian, it's got so many fucking shades of a very similar Breaking Bad, which had the luxury of telling the story over 5 years. Right. So, I was entrenched. This was like a little taste of it. It was like the iceberg.
I told you that Gina grabbed my partner on the Corolla show. She's like, I didn't like it as much because I like Narcos. And it's like, all right, well, I mean, I don't know that that's not true. I just, I haven't seen Narcos and thus I don't have the same
reaction. What you're saying about like not watching great TV, which I totally disagree with, is like saying like, hey dude, look, I love the sex that I get from that trampy prostitute at the end of the block every week because I don't know what good sex is like because I don't have a wife.
That's the best analogy.
I've ever heard. Yeah. So like Sicario is just like a trampy, like,
can we get that drop?
Herpes ridden prostitute.
Okay.
And like you didn't get to actually spend some good years with like a loving wife,
yeah, but
which
I'm getting,
is
but I'm
Breaking Bad.
But I'm getting some.
Yeah, but you think it's good.
I'm getting some.
You don't realize that it's just okay. It's still good. Sex is always good.
I'm getting
but
it.
It's not. You know what I mean?
Getting it.
All right, what do we do here?
Any also rents?
Also rents for me would be Get the Gringo. Almost made the list. So many great scenes. Get the Gringo, guys. You know what? Get the Gringo. Right kind of when Mel Gibson was losing his mind, and Get the Gringo doesn't really get the, it kind of got buried.
Yeah.
It's so good.
No Country for Old Men had several scenes in Mexico.
Amor Los Perros, which has come up very recently, often.
I almost got clever and did the sacrifice scene from Apocalypto.
Apocalypto is all in Mexico.
That's true.
Y Tu Mamá, también, which comes up too often. Sicario.
I really wanted to.
The white
tried
chick
so
with
hard.
The baby in the back seat from the second Sicario.
That's the second one. That's the best scene.
It's unnerving, and I think about it all the time, especially because I got a little kid in the back seat, and I'm like, what
and
the fuck?
And you're picking up drug dealers.
Not doing that.
I really wanted to get the scene. Remember the scene from The Game where Michael Douglas wakes up in Mexico? So as part of The Game, Michael Douglas's character wakes up like penniless and stranded in Mexico, and he has to kind of find his way back. And at one point he humbles himself by like going into I think it was in like a bus station or a restaurant or something. And he just says to all the crowd who's just gathered there for, you know, for whatever, eating lunch or whatever. He's like, I'm penniless and I need to get back to the United States. Can anyone give me some money? Which, you know, is a very humbling moment for a very rich man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that is. Well,
it's a great scene. I couldn't find a clip of it, unfortunately.
There's a movie called Monsters, directed by Gareth Edwards, who went on to do a little movie called Godzilla and one of the Star Wars Rogue movies. He made one with Scoot McNairy.
Scoot.
Scoot, called Monsters. And takes a while to pay off, but you do see some monsters by the time it's all said and done. However, most of it is him traversing with Whitney Abel. Down through the jungle of Mexico. Monsters, 2010.
I just talked about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago, but my God, the final scene in Shawshank Redemption and Z Watanejo. So great.
Mm-hmm. Wild Bunch. Some good stuff there.
I've never seen The Wild Bunch.
Interesting. Man on Fire. Did I already say Man on Fire?
No, you did not.
Treasure of the Sierra Madre. That's already been said by you. All right, that's all for me. Real quick. Oh, no. Damn it.
Come on.
Sorry, I wanted to include Chad's favorite, and I didn't have that.
Who's Chad?
Chad does a lot of work for us every week, and I like to include his favorite here, so let me do that. Because my favorites are from Sicario, and are number one and two on the listener list, I'll go with Miguel singing Remember Me to his grandma and a coco.
Devastating.
A coco.
You like a coco?
And also Rans from the listeners, Sicario, Once Upon a Time, multiple scenes. That's another problem when we do scenes is like, you know, multiple scenes in the same movie. Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Johnny Depp with no eyes, scene, Johnny Depp shooting the chef and mariachi taser. Desperado's got a few scenes, Buscemi opening the bar scene. That's a great scene.
That's pretty great.
The bar shootout later in the movie. The bartender
got worst of all.
Roma, the protest scene, the military training scene. Look at that. The country house fire scene, Roma.
Is Chad allowed to give 12 picks?
No, this is a listener, also Rans.
Oh, okay.
Where the Millers, two, you're going to like this.
That was a great scene.
The baby weed scene, yeah, and where the Millers.
I'm going to sign you that movie someday. That's a fun movie.
The Luis Guzman police stop scene, and We Are the Millers from the listeners
as well.
Where
the Millers is not a bad movie.
All right, let's get to the gambling portion of the program.
Let's do it.
Thank you, Gio, for doing this. Results from the gambling from last week. It was It, Chapter 2, that we both gambled on. I said 79. Brian said 82. The score at the time of recording was 67.
Oh, no.
The score has gone down to 63, making me the winner.
Too high.
So why don't you watch Fitzcarraldo again?
Oh, well, that seems like an odd choice. But okay. Watch The Wild Bunch.
No, you'll be watching the fucking amazing Jonathan documentary that I've been overselling for the last couple of weeks. I'm really looking forward to discussing that
life-changing movie that has been oversold by quite a bit.
I'm sure I oversold it. I do love this movie, guys. And if you watch it, I've talked to a number of you listeners out there. Tam, I know that you absolutely love it. I was emailing back and forth with you. If you watch this movie and then listen to us discuss it next week. It'll be fun. And then we're also going to do a deep dive spoiler discussion for Patreon, I'm sure, because there's a lot to uncover with this one and talk about. God, it's a fun movie. It's just a fun movie.
Where do I find this one?
I don't know. It's on one of the streaming fucking things, like Amazon or... Oh, it's on Hulu. Hulu. It's on Hulu.
It's streaming on Hulu.
$6 a month. It'll get you some Hulu. So, all right. This week, we are gambling on... Hustlers, The Goldfinch. We can't do Brittany Runs a Marathon, which I guess is going wide. I Know Too Much About Monos. Well,
she's wide.
I Know Too Much About Monos, and I Know Too Much About Freaks. So I want to just do Goldfinch.
The
Goldfinch is probably the biggest one.
Oh, really?
And or Hustlers.
Hustlers is the only one I heard of. Well, no, I've heard of a Goldfinch.
Hustlers is J-Lo.
What is Goldfinch?
It's the Baby Driver guy, and it looks like Incredibly Loud and Uncomfortably Close, or whatever that horrible fucking 9/11 movie was that was no good. Remember that one? About the guy that lost his dad, Tom Hanks, and the 9/11.
You said it was ungood, and I stayed away.
Well, Goldfinch looks like that.
Wasn't it released at like award season time? And
it was like supposed to like just clean up, but it did nothing because it was sappy as shit, begging you to fucking care.
At least Headhunters I'm familiar with.
Headhunters? That's not coming out. That came out years ago.
Hustlers?
Headhunter. You really did say Headhunters.
I really did.
Hustlers, yes, with J-Lo. It looks like The Kitchen / Widows.
Two great movies.
It's you know what it is? It's ladies cleaning up their man's shit and being tough on the streets.
All right, wanna do that one?
Because that's what the ladies are demanding. They need to see themselves as tough on the screen. So they're getting it. Let's see how it goes. I'm fine with it. I like badass bitches. I'm in. You know what I mean? I just don't know if we need three movies within like 12 months of each other.
This is typically a time when
the exact same
when studios release films they really believe in.
You know what? There's some good movies coming out in September. Monos is one. Monos.
I don't think there's a single good movie coming out in the rest of the month. Thanks, single good movie.
All right. All right. So Hustlers, we're doing.
Yeah.
We're doing Hus.
Hus.
Lures.
What's your number?
This is very similar to the Anna Kendrick's movie that came out like in June. What was the name of that one? The Hustler.
The one where she got, where she was a simple favor?
No. And there's like a gold car behind them. It looked awful and it came and went so quickly. And I was so happy about that because my eyes didn't have to.
Are you thinking of the Anne Hathaway movie?
Anne Hathaway.
Right, with Rebel Wilson?
Yes, what was it called? It was called like Hustler or something.
Yeah, it was called The Hustle, maybe?
The Hustle, yes.
Is that what it was called?
Yes, Brian, you probably saw it. This is a movie you would see.
I think it had like a 13% of Rotten Tomatoes or something absurd.
Anna Hathaway. Who did I think was in this?
You said Anna Kendrick, but it's Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway, yes.
What's the Rotten Tomatoes score of that? It was like it was in the teens.
I don't know. I'm looking at the 5.4 on IMDb.
That's not good.
All right, let's see what what's your guess?
48.
37.
Shit.
For Hustlers.
You know something.
I know that I've heard it's bad. Jesus Christ almighty. 91%.
No, it is not. No, yeah. It is not 91%.
91%.
It might come down 50 points.
Holy fuck. Goldfinch is at 26%.
If it came down 50 points, I'd still
Everything
win.
Else is high. Look Holy at this. Shit. Brittany runs a marathon. We both, discussed it. 90%. Wow. Monos, 93%. And Freaks, 90%.
I don't know where to go with this.
Look at this. The Goldfinch is just getting crushed.
What was the score on the Goldfinch?
26%.
Whoa, The Hustle was 14%. I said 13. Damn, I'm on this week. Look at that. I almost nailed Hustlers.
All right, so what was your score?
I was off by 40 points. 43 points. 48.
But you're still going to win.
Yeah.
48. I hate that. It's like Paiga.
48. I have a system.
I said 49.
I have a system.
49% for me.
It's needlessly elaborate. It's 40, good.
48% for Keep you. Okay. Current score. Now, what did I say? 93? Fucking bastards. All right. And
I'm looking at the listener art for this week.
Pretty good, right?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Thanks to Cat Magically. For the listener art for this week. It's pretty fantastic. Why is my head shiny? Why is it sparkling?
I don't know. I hope she's cool with her name because she didn't get back to me in an email.
You know what's funny? I never wear a bow tie.
You're a bow tie kind of guy, though.
No, I'm not.
You can't falter for making an educated guess by hearing your voice.
Stop it. Yeah. The last bow tie I wore was at my wedding. And that was the first one I wore.
Wait, you wore one to your wedding?
Well, I wore a tuxedo. No, I wore a tie. Oh, yeah, I wore like an actual necktie. You know what? I don't know the last time I wore a bow tie. Well, I think I went to a New Year's Eve wedding and wore a tux.
This is not interesting to anyone.
Yeah, I think I wore a tux to that.
At all.
Anyway, very, very...
Not even a little.
The listener art, it's a very, very, very small part of it. And it's very funny. Thanks, Kat. Check out AndersonAndBrian.com for that. Feature artist this week, Dead Cat Hat. El Forajido. Forajido de... Huchipila. I'm going to say Huchipila. Patreon available now. Top 5 blockbusters of the last 20 years, at least from one of us. Clockwork Orange Sniff Tracks.
I'll make good on that. Fix that.
Patreon.com/TheFilmVault. We will be doing a new Sniff Track soon. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The Amazon banner sits atop AndersonAndBrian.com. And like I said, we genuinely thank you for clicking through, whether it's for your home or office or whatever. It means a lot to us. And costs nothing for you, so it's a win-win. Thank you. AndersonAndBrian.com is where you go for everything you need, including tickets to groupers. Get those tickets if you're in Atlanta, D.C., Chicago, New York, San Francisco, and, of course, Los Angeles. Facebook, Twitter, The Film Vault. Special thanks to Chad Yuki, Mike Cole, and Giovanni, as always, for you guys' help. We appreciate it. And until next time.
We do it for Van Gogh. Que alegran tu